97.5 The Fanatic.
11:03 here on 97.5 The Fanatic, broadcasting from the Xfinity studio, only from Comcast. D. Lineham, Devon Givens, the show has been rolling. Josh Rabick doing a great job, as always, and we've had a lot of fun talking Eagles, Flyers, Phillies, Sixers, and we're going to pivot.
By the way,
yes,
on a December day, to be talking significantly, meaning with purpose, about all four sports.
Absolutely.
That's a rarity.
Yeah, and unfortunately, some bad. But it's
right.
The nature
it
of the sport.
Still generates some emotion, some conversation.
Yeah, some real conversation from everyone about how they feel about their teams, and rightfully so. And one of them, your favorite coach now in town, Elaine.
I became a fan today.
Elaine Vigneault is has his team rolling right now. They're 16-7-5.
They tied the franchise record for the most points in November.
24.
That's correct, sir.
10 wins, 14 of 16 games, and 24 points, 37 right now, which is third, one behind, unless the island displayed tonight and I didn't pay attention. They were one behind, at least earlier today, behind the Islanders, who have 38. The Capitals are in front in the Metropolitan Division. They look good. They're spry. They're fast. They're young. They're a little older, but they have bought in to what Elaine Vigneault is putting out there in terms of the system. And he had a chance to join Mike Missinelli earlier. And this interview, people, is why he is D. Lineham's favorite coach in town.
It's true.
So let's all kick back, put our feet up, and listen to the great conversation between Mike and Flyers coach Elaine Vigneault.
All right. Ladies and gentlemen, the hottest team in town right now. That hockey team. And last night, they turned a close game into a rout. And they are right now being feared in the league. Let's bring in the head coach of the Philadelphia Flyers, Elaine Vigneault, on the Comcast Business Hotline. Elaine, how you doing today?
Good. How you doing?
We're doing great, and you're doing great. And all of a sudden, we're talking hockey again in this town. Let me ask you, from the start, from where this team started in training camp, tell me about the growth to you guys getting to this point.
Well, I still think we're a work in progress here. We're definitely have improved since the first day of training camp, but in my estimation, there's still definitely room for growth here. We've got quite a few young players on our team that haven't obviously reached their full potential. They're young players working to get better, working to become true professionals. And we also have a combination of, you know, good veterans that are highly motivated. They want to prove that, you know, they can help this team win. So we're a work in progress, you know, we're taking it a day at a time.
When you looked at this team in training camp, I mean, we didn't know what to expect. What did you expect that your team was at that point?
I was exactly like you and my coaching staff. We didn't really know what to expect. You know, we were coming in here with an open mind and no preconceived notions on everybody, on anyone. We just wanted guys to go out there and show what they could do, and for us to evaluate them and try and put the pieces where they would permit us to you know, have good team success. And our first goal, obviously, is to get into the playoffs so that we have an opportunity to compete for the Stanley Cup. So it's an 82-game marathon. We're just at the beginning of the marathon. But, you know, I like the way we're progressing. I like our work attitude, our work ethic, I mean, and I like our attitude. Guys want to learn, want to get better, and that's what we're striving to do here.
All right, so from that point, when you look at him now, what couple of guys have been the biggest keys, the biggest surprises that have helped this team win? When you look at the team overall, in what area was the growth that you didn't expect that came about?
Well, I wouldn't say didn't expect, but I would say that you know, we were coming in this year with, you know, question marks on our goaltending, in the sense that last year had been a tough year. I wasn't here last year, but it had been a tough year for the Flyers. They had gone through 8 goaltenders. this year with a young Carter Hart, who had, I think, a little bit more than 30 games experience. That's not a lot for a goaltender. And Brian Elliott, who we brought back as a veteran goaltender, a healthy Brian Elliott. We hoped that those two guys would be a good tandem for us. Well, you know, there's no doubt that in November, in the tough schedule that we had, we needed both those guys, and they've both come up big. And in, you know, today's NHL, you need goaltending. You need grade A goaltending. And that's what we're getting right now. So I think it starts there with the goaltending, and then, you know, it goes on to the improvement, the individual improvement that's led to a good team improvement by our young players coming in, you know, getting better, and the veteran leadership and the veteran role models that we have on this team with, you know, the Giroux and the Courtois and the Voracek that are good players and they want to prove that they can help the Flyers win.
Now, interestingly enough, the veteran players, you haven't been afraid to call them out. And it's unusual in this day and age when a coach will not be afraid to do that because players these days are a little sensitive. Your style is that you're not afraid to do that. And I assume, like, when you do that publicly, you're also doing that privately. What do you get out of doing it that way?
Well, again, like, my interpretation of calling someone out, and maybe yours or the media might be a little different. I wasn't calling anybody out. I was just stating facts. And the facts were that, you know, whether it be our captain, Claude Giroux, or Jake Voracek, or Sean Couturier, or James Van Riems, like, I just felt that all those guys could play better and needed to play better for our team to have success. Stating facts. Facts that they were aware of, facts that they would be the first to tell you that they did need to play better. They do need to continue to improve if we are going to have success, if we're going to get into the playoffs. So I'm just stating facts. Whether you want to, you know, call it I'm challenging my players or whatever, at the end of the day, stating facts, and the facts are what they are.
I think most people find that refreshing, actually, in this day and age. We're talking to Alain Vigneault, the head coach of the Philadelphia Flyers. Now, Alain, you have a track record of raising the level of teams. You've taken over some teams that were kind of low down, and you've built them up fairly quickly and had great success in this league. So what is the secret to that? How would you describe yourself as a coach that gets that kind of effort out of players?
You know, there's no secret to it. I think, you know, any player will follow, you know, the direction that's going to permit him to have success and permit the team to have success. So, you know, we're telling the players exactly what's expected of them on the ice. We're telling them exactly what their role is on our team and how to go about, you know, accomplishing that role. And I think once you do that and you're clear on the process, players follow the direction, do what they need to do, and they want to be held accountable. Like, what I found with this group is there's a good sense of accountability. They want to get better. They're not afraid, you know, to hear things the way they are and the way they need to be told. And that's what we're doing with this group. And at the same time, you know, I found them to be very coachable. They all want to get better, and that's real positive for us, the Flyers, and our fans.
Would you call? I'm trying to. Would you call yourself a taskmaster? Would you call yourself a guy who is has a good relationship with your players? Like, how do you balance that kind of a blend to be a successful coach, where they're going to respect you but also kind of like you? Or doesn't that matter?
No, I think it does. I think it's a question of respect, and, you know, I respect players. I respect what they go through and the amount of work that they have to put on and off the ice. I do also understand, in my estimation anyway, what it takes for a team to have success. I've come close twice. I'm bringing my knowledge here to Philly in the hopes to bring a Stanley Cup. I want to win one before I retire. And I looked at this team, and I really believe that we have some good pieces. Chuck Fletcher made some good acquisitions in the summer. We're a good team, and we're going to get into the playoffs. But I believe that, you know, there's one, I wouldn't say one way to do things, but I do think that, you know, between players and coaches, you've got to make sure that you understand that players play and coaches coach. And that's what we're trying to do. We're obviously respect their input. respect what they're doing on a daily basis to get better. But we all have to work together, and we all have our jobs to do.
For many years, your captain has been kind of a lightning rod of sorts with this team and the fan base, with people always wanting more and people ready to kind of knock him down. How would you assess where Claude Giroux is right now as a player for you?
Geez, I've been in this league almost 20 years, and I've rarely met an individual that wants to win as badly as he does, that wants to make sure that the legacy that he leaves with the Flyers is a positive one, is a good one, is a winning one. He is unbelievable as far as, you know, the will to win. Coachability is not an issue. I'm not aware of what happened here before I was here, but I can say to you and say to the Flyers fan that he's a great role model. He wants to win here in Philly, and he's going to do everything he can with his teammates and our help as far as coaches and management to try and bring a cup here to Philly.
It seems like everybody always wants more from him. Do you sense that?
I don't know. I can't comment on what happened in the past here, but I do know that since I've gotten here, since day one, he's progressed. He's getting better. He's understanding my directions as far as what it takes for him to perform well on the ice, what it takes him to help the team win games. And he's certainly been, in my mind, progressing and on the upswing as far as the player. And then I need all the players on this team to continue to improve and continue to get better.
You have not been afraid to use young players in key spots. I mean, for instance, Morgan Frost comes up, boom, he's on the first line. Did you do that because you wanted him to play with skilled players, or you saw him at that level that he's that type of player that he can carry that responsibility?
No, I think there you got to give credit to our pro scouts and our management. They all saw him, and then Scott Gordon, obviously our coach in Lehigh Valley. They all saw his progression since he was sent to Lehigh Valley, and for a young man with his skill set, he has to be put in a situation where he can have success on the ice. He's a skilled, offensive, gifted player. So for him to have success, you've got to put him with offensive, gifted players. And putting him with Claude Giroux and TK, for me, was the right spot to put him. He's in what I would say in our top nine forwards right now. He's playing well offensively, playing well defensively. You got to be able to play a 200-foot game. So I liked what he's given us since he's been here. He's working on becoming a pro, which is consistency day in and day out, practice in, practice out. And so he's improving, and hopefully he'll keep doing that for us.
One question on your goalie, a quick question, because you have the young kid, and early in the season, people were saying, well, he's got to play, he's got to learn from his mistakes. You've played Elliott a great deal, and in fact, coming off a really good effort by the kid, you went with Elliott the next night. How do you plan to handle the goaltending situation as far as disparity of playing time the rest of the year?
Well, obviously the number one criteria is performance. You got to play well. But on the other hand, also, you have to look at our schedule. And in the month of November, we had a crazy schedule. We had 16 games. We had four back-to-backs. We had, I think it was 4-3 games and 4 nights and 4 and 3 or 4 four games and 6 nights. So you need 2 goaltenders. And obviously the number one criteria, like I said, was performance, but it was also schedule based. So our schedule is not getting easier, but it's a little lighter than it was in November. So we'll stick with the criteria of number one, performance, but both our goaltenders right now are playing extremely well. So both of them should get a chance to play.
All right. Now, you know where you have arrived now. There are people out there that are definitely paying attention to you, but whereas before, maybe you were kind of, sleeping on some people. But now you're identified as, so you got to meet this kind of a challenge. You do see that, right?
Well, geez, I wouldn't have come to Philly if the expectations weren't to win and to bring a Stanley Cup. I'm like the fans, and I'm like the people that follow this team and are in love with this team. I want to win, and I've come to Philly to win. It starts by getting into the playoffs. That's our first objective this year. But I wouldn't want it any other way. I've coached in big markets where the expectations were high, and that's exactly what I expected from Philly, and that's exactly what I want.
Well, people are pretty happy right now. Keep it going. Alain Vigneault, the head coach of the Philadelphia Flyers. Good talking with you, Alain. We'll talk to you up the road.
Nice talking to you, too. Take care.
All right. There he is, ladies and gentlemen. Alain Vigneault.
And that was Alain Vigneault with Mike Missanelli earlier this afternoon on the Mike Missanelli Show. D, you heard it a second time. What did you think? Better the second time around?
I calling people out. Remember, I couldn't figure the phrase. He says, well, you may call it calling people out.
Yeah, yeah.
The media may call it that. I think we have a different term for it. I call it stating the facts. It's great. I love it.
Yeah, he's good. And he's the one thing, Josh heard it as well. We'll get Josh's thoughts on what he was saying, too. He said, and we're going to make the playoffs. And I'm like,
I told you earlier. I said it.
I know you did.
That he
matter-of-factly said, we're going to make the playoffs.
Yeah.
And just kept talking as if he said yes, right?
He's not going to have to cycle back for that one.
They're in, huh?
I just think they're a good team, and I think they'll continue to play and grow as a good team.
And even if they don't, he's going to say something at the end of the year, to your point of everything we just heard about being an upfront person, and tell why they didn't make the playoffs. And say, we'll get better, we'll do this, we'll address this, right? Everything. Yeah. So yeah, that would, Josh, what did you think of what?
I think he would also say, I'm incredibly disappointed if they didn't get better.
Right,
that.
Yeah,
absolutely. Some injury would have to me, I think. I don't know. I just feel like they're going in the right direction.
Right, yeah. And right now they're going to have to overcome Roffel being out for probably the next month. Similar situation with Lawton with the broken finger, so... One of the Flyers' strengths has been their depth, and we haven't seen it in recent years, but in hockey compared to other sports, the superstars aren't quite as important as much as the depth is important. And right now, the Flyers' third and fourth line has given them a lot of strength, and being able to roll four lines, and now especially with acquisition during the offseason of Niskanen and Braun, you have more defensemen that are comfortable with the puck, which ends up leading to higher possession numbers, and that's why the Flyers going into last night's game allowed the fourth least amount of shots on their goaltender.
And even with someone like Ghost being moved to a different line after first of all, as you guys pointed out, the three games, right?
Yeah.
Sitting for the three games, and he had to sit and watch. He had to sit there and was fuming about not playing, and once he got out there, I guess the message was sent, I have to play. And I have to play better. And he goes out there, and he's playing better since he's been back in the lineup and on this different line. And Alain Vigneault explained everything in his theory on how he goes about all of these things. So it was a great interview.
Yeah. Let me ask you, Josh, just because we are talking. Nolan Patrick situation with the migraine. They call it migraine disorder. So it's not even just like having migraine headaches. I mean, there's he's trying to get something under control. But how much, if he was a healthy guy, how big a difference does he make?
He makes an absolutely huge difference.
Yeah, I mean, they invested in this guy. I mean, this is their guy.
Sure.
Right, and he also has a skill set that's different compared to Frost and Farabee because I'd say Nolan Patrick's really good along the board, so he's able to, if you move him down like a JVR, who you traditionally think of as a top nine forward, but he has a skill set that he can play the energy line, the fourth line type of stuff, whereas Frost or Farabee, if you don't have him up on one of the top three lines, you unfortunately have to send him down to like Lehigh.
I got you. Which is actually what AV was talking about, why he has Frost on that top line. Exactly. I got you.
I love that, the energy line.
Yeah.
I love that. Love the hockey lingo. Alain Vigneault with Mike Missanelli earlier today.
You ever been on skates?
Yeah, I've done it like with family stuff and back in
middle school. I've never played hockey.
No, that's the only way I've done it is just ice skating. We class trip or the family wanted to go out there. And I remember one time I went out. How about this? I had busted up my wrist playing ball. Fractured my wrist. So at that time, it was healing. So we were on vacation. I think we were in Ocean City, Maryland. And we were out there and they wanted to go ice skating. So we went ice skating and I can just remember having my wrist taped up, right? So I wouldn't, because I know I can't skate.
You didn't want to fall.
And if I do fall, I need to be able to catch myself. And man, was I falling and I'm catching and I'm like, oh, I'm going to break my wrist again. That was the last time that I have been skating.
I actually competed as a figure skater at a very young age. Back then, you got these, if you won something, they would give you something you could sew onto your jacket or whatever, so you would have your badges all over it if you won
got
something.
The patches.
Yeah, the patches.
You got the patches.
Yeah.
Letterman.
That's and then actually, I covered figure skating for probably about 8 years.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, during
I knew about the other things.
Michelle Kwan years, Sasha Cohen. My favorite, oh my God, there was a Russian kid that I really, really liked. Not Yevgeny Plushenko, not him. His name was Alexei Yagudin. Was awesome. Yeah.
Yeah.
I had a good time covering figure skating.
Where would you travel to do that?
Oh my God, I went all over the world. Japan, Australia.
Josh, what are we doing?
Yeah. I got to see the world covering figure skating. Seriously. Yeah. I'm not kidding.
Yeah.
And all because of my first years that I did TNT basketball, a guy liked how I always got my stuff into them. He thought I hustled. And he's like, how about you want to be my backstage reporter for figure skating?
And this is with the Turner?
Yeah,
okay.
Turner.
Okay.
And so I said, I don't know how much I know about figure. I said, I'm a quick learner. I'll study everything. And so he hired me and away I went.
That's pretty cool.
I feel like I made a wrong career choice.
Yeah, that's why I asked you, what are we doing? 610-632-0975. That's Dee Lynam. She covers hockey, as figure skating as well. And hockey, probably her favorite coach, Elaine Vigneault, is now in South Philly. That's Josh Ravick. We are about to take a quick break. We come right back and we continue all of our conversation right here on 97.5 The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
The Fanatic.
The Fanatic. Dee Lynam, Devon Givens, Josh Ravick. We're here talking about figure skating, James Bond.
Well, it's that time of night.
It is.
It's that time of night.
It is. A little James Bond action. We can talk about that. And
One year for Christmas, I bought my dad the whole collection of all the Bond movies.
Wow, going back to like Sean Connery.
Oh, yeah, and you could buy it as a
Pierce
set.
Pierce Brosnan.
It looked cool, too.
Did it?
Like the presentation.
How many were in there?
It's a great question. It's a lot.
What do you
think?
It's
a good number.
How many
you
in
think
there?
It's 10?
It has to be 10.
10 to 12, I'd say.
I think each of them have three apiece, don't they?
Right. Well, that's
between
how you
Connery,
start to
Connery, Brosnan, and Craig, don't they have?
Oh, I think Connery did more.
Okay.
Roger Moore was
Roger
one of my
Moore,
favorites.
Yeah, so that's
I always thought my dad looked a little like Roger Moore.
Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Got a little Roger Moore, too.
That's definitely more than 10.
Yeah.
If you include Moore, Connery, Brosnan, and Craig, definitely double digits.
Yeah.
Yeah, so who's the next Bond? So Daniel Craig is probably, I think this is his last run, Daniel Craig.
Yeah, then it's going to be a woman.
I got to see who the woman is.
I'm going to get it for you.
Yeah, James Bond movie. Let's see if we, get something. And then we have to talk about another James D.
Yeah.
James Harden.
That's James H.
Yes, so James Harden. This play from last night. where James Harden gets in the open floor, breakaway dunk, goes up there, flushes it. But when he flushes it,
yep,
weird things happen with an object like a basketball, a football, a baseball, a puck. These things happen. And you're talking about putting in the rim, in the net, as hard as he's dunking it. Sometimes things happen. You still have a spin on the ball rotation from time to time.
Sure,
it net, does things.
Net flipped it right up.
It flips around. It flips it out after it went through.
Mm-hmm.
But the officials, D, no basket.
I looked up who it was, too. I'd never had heard of the guy.
Oh, new official.
Well, you may know him. I just said I had never heard of him. But it's not one of the familiar names to you and I.
Yeah, I need to see the name then.
It was. I'm going to give it to you. But anyhow, keep telling the people.
Yeah, so the officials looked at the replay, and they came together and said that the basket did not count. Ball popped out. It did not count because it went out of bounds after it broke in, broke through, went out of bounds on the sideline after Harden gave chase and the opponent gave chase. The Spurs. That was the Spurs. So gave chase to get the ball. And James Harden, like, look, no.
What are you talking about?
Coach's review. That was good. I made it.
Don't you love how they always do the little.
Yeah, and I'm tired of that.
I know.
By the way, the coach's challenge. So now we're in the spot where it looks like the Rockets and James Harden are trying to protest what happened and trying to get this thing situated because he made the basket and they did not get to him.
And to me, by the way, the official was...
Yes.
James Capers.
Yes. I know James Capers. Yes.
Right, so that's who it was.
Okay.
But my point is, you have a three-man person crew. How do the other two... Because I was at a game last night with the Blue Coats. Guy calls ball, going back the other way and... Two people come over, his other two say, no, went off his fingers. Mm-hmm. He's like, oh, my bad. And you make the change. Like, how did that not happen with your other two people?
Yeah, because you're right. Because
Somebody had to see that it went through. The rest of us did.
Even if you don't go to the replay,
you knew.
You get together. They have their little huddle.
Exactly.
Hey, I saw this. Did you see it this way?
Yeah, exactly.
What did you see? And they figure it out and they get it done. And then when you go back to the replay center, no one saw the ball go through, and even if they didn't go to the replay center, you mean to tell me Secaucus can't call
and say
a basket count
was
that
good.
Bucket?
Right,
count it before the official clock expires. You handle this
now
properly.
Here, the real problem
ridiculous.
Comes because it becomes a double overtime game,
mm-hmm.
won by two by San Antonio.
Yeah,
so now you're left with a situation. And all day, people debated what should the NBA do. They did nothing. And so now it's putting it in the hands of Houston if they want to challenge. It's not the word for it, but appeal. I mean, and they have 48 hours, so the 24 is now. So I think you're going to find where Houston's going to do it tomorrow.
They should win. And they should win. Now, what do you do?
Play the game from that point on.
When?
Oh.
The next time these two teams meet?
I guess. That's weird.
That is very weird because you're talking about an overtime situation or whatever time it was in the game that they're going to have to go out there and try to play these minutes.
I think
minutes.
Somebody told me it was like 7-plus minutes. Well, I'll look.
Oh, man.
Yeah. 7-plus in the fourth.
7-plus minutes in the fourth quarter.
I'm pretty sure. But by the way, that same dunk brought up that if I had seen it, I didn't remember seeing it when LeBron was with the Heat. Came down, ferociously threw it down, and the ball comes back off a person's head through the basket.
Okay.
And that head was Gerald Henderson.
Yeah, I remember that. While he was with the Hornets?
Yes.
That
Bobcats
at
the time.
Yeah.
And that basket didn't count for LeBron. They didn't call that a basket.
That's ridiculous.
They thought it never went down.
That's absurd.
Isn't that crazy?
That's crazy. You have
so
this,
you whatever have you see LeBron's numbers,
yeah.
he has two more
yeah,
points.
Yes, two more points.
I just wanted you all to know.
You invest all of this in the replay center in Secaucus.
Yeah.
You
have a lot of jobs up there.
You ask veteran officials to retire to head up the officials, and you have them during like the NFL does, in the replay center so they can go back there. Hey, what did you think? If this is a TNT broadcast, and hey, D-line, we're going to toss it back to the replay center.
I mean,
caucus.
This was a unique.
This is what you have it for.
Totally. This was a unique situation to me. Like, I don't care what's reviewable or whatever. You know that was a basket. Pick up the phone and call the front and say, you got to tell them that was a basket. Could have been done in 2 seconds.
That's not even
a matter of, like, fighting the clock.
That is it. And I don't think anyone would be upset.
I don't think so.
And the fact that it's all over social media, the NBA is big time in the social media. The officials have their own social media account. The replay sent, the officials sent out, every day we see the replays of, all right, Joel Embiid, the ball went off of his foot.
Oh, the two-minute report.
The two-minute report.
But this didn't fall in the final 2 minutes because I checked the thing today, but I forgot.
But my point is this.
Oh, yeah. That
you do all of this.
And you can't
and
do
you
this.
And you can't figure that out?
Yeah, come on.
You can't straighten that out?
I'm with you.
I mean, come on. If you want to have the replay center, get it right. You're going to miss stuff in real time. Guess what? This is what you have it for. It's not in real time anymore. You can go back and correct it.
Yes. Give me a T.O., baby. Light the lamp.
Thank you. Thank you, T-Mac. My goodness. I saw that last night, and I'm like, are they seriously really not going to count this bucket? Now, out of that, you got a great game out of Lonnie Walker, and you're happy about that for a local guy, right? He's finally being able to just get his feet underneath him in the NBA and goes out there and performs very well, puts up 20-plus career high. So I love that part. But okay. My goodness.
Yeah, I know.
My goodness.
That story still has a chapter, an ending to be written to
That's
it.
That's just absurd. 610-632-0975. Linda in Mayfair. Josh in Red Hill, we will get you two on the other side. We're going to take this quick break, our final one. Come back. We're going to close down the show with you. And by the way, Josh has it for us, D. 26 Bond/007 films.
I knew it was a good, big collection.
Roger Moore played the Bond the longest. It wasn't 7 films. Sean Connery second with 6 films.
And the Bond girl is Ana de Armas.
I have to see her. I think I know the name, but I have to see her face.
She doesn't even need hair. That's how good looking she is.
Oh,
that's what they're saying about her.
She can just shave her head. All right, why not? Fanatic deal of the week. Back just in time for the holidays, folks. Get dinner for two to Chima Brazilian Steakhouse for only $57 with this week's Fanatic Deal of the Week. Enjoy the fresh gourmet salad bar, 2 Rodizio dinners, which includes gaucho service. So, it's the perfect gift, and it's only available while supplies last. Purchase now at 975thefanatic.com. Keyword deal. Brighten up somebody's Christmas with a gift card to Chima's Brazilian Steakhouse, where you get it for $57. They don't know what you got it for. Get them that gift. D-Line of Devon Givens, final segment here on The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
The Fanatic.
Ah, 11:46, 97.5 The Fanatic. So, final segment, D-Line, I'm Devon Givens, Josh Rabick. Appreciate it as always, Josh. Always fun, man, to do the show with you. And we just got a phone call who we couldn't hang on, but I've referenced him in the past. This is a guy, so you heard Jim from Havertown talk about sometimes Andrew and I would sit, you know, when we were producing and have conversations with people, and you get to know everyone. That's why I always say we do these shows, and I'm having these shows and these conversations with my friends, because it's a conversation about sports. We're all having a good time. You get to know people. And one guy who always really championed me being from behind the glass and getting a shot on the air way back, a guy named Clark. It was in Mount Laurel, right? I think it's Mount Laurel. But Clark always called in and just kind words and
nice.
I'm going to call your boss and tell him that you need to be on more and all this stuff. And you know, here we are, and it's great. And Clark, I haven't heard from him in a while. And while I did not speak to him, Josh just spoke to him, and he said just to let me know that he still listens and all that. So,
that was
Clark,
cool.
I really appreciate it, man. Definitely think about you and not hearing you, but it's great to hear that you're doing well, and I really appreciate everything that you have done. So that was great. That's pretty cool, man.
That is way
I love that.
Cool.
I love that. Definitely love that. So thank you, Clark. Yeah, that's pretty cool. Daniel Craig, this is his final run.
His
James
and
Bond.
Final.
Yep, No Time to Die is the name of the new Bond flick. And you're right, Ana de Armas is also now part of the group for the Bond movies here. All right, is that Chris Evans as well? Is she in it? I don't know. No, this is not.
By
that's
the way,
totally
I was correct on the James Harden was with 750 to go in that game.
Okay.
And they were up 13 at the time.
Okay.
With 750 to play.
That changes
that
things.
That changed the whole complexion.
That changes things. That changes things.
Unbelievable.
Without a doubt. Let's go back to the phones. We wanted to give everybody their chance. Our final segment. Let's go to Linda in Mayfair talking some Phillies and Zach Wheeler. 5 years, Linda. What do you think?
I love it. I love Wheeler. I'm glad they did not re-sign Hamels. He's shot. I mean, if you guys remember last year, he got smacked around quite a few times.
Yeah, and the report was that he was offered a contract, but it was half of what he got from Atlanta, and he decided to go with more money.
Well, that's all right. God bless his little heart. I am not for bringing guys back. I'm sorry. Zach Wheeler, one little tiny thing. You probably know this already, but I'm going to tell you.
Uh-huh.
He threw over 1,000 pitches last year. Over 97 miles an hour. The entire Phillies pitching staff threw 40.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yep.
That's what you're going to get.
Let's hope so.
He's a competitor. He's a groovy dude. And I like guys that'll face you down. And he's not going to bother him, the criticism or nothing. I love him. Okay, so my next signing, Miss Denise, hello, dear.
Hello there.
My next signing is Didi Gregorius. I got to have him. Absolutely got to have him. Girardi loves him. I love him. And I want the Phillies to get their little pens ready and stop messing around.
Yeah, we brought that name up earlier as a target. We keep hearing that name out there, rumored as to Joe Girardi brought him up. And we know they were together in New York, Linda. So it would be a very good fit. And it would definitely fill out the infield and how they would play. Now, here's the question I have for you. If you do that, where do you put Scott Kingery?
Well, Gregorius is a shortstop, as far as I know.
Right.
I put him at second base, Kingery.
Ah, wait.
That poor guy, moving him around, it's a sin, Devon, really. The poor kid, it's a wonder his head doesn't move around like The Exorcist. not knowing where he is.
Well, the only thing I would say is, as long as he can, wherever you assign
and
him.
Thank you, Linda,
be
as
there
always.
Be there for the season, as opposed to, you know. The other guy liked moving him around whenever he felt like moving him around.
Yeah, Kepler.
Yeah.
Right. But what do you do with Segura? You figure Segura will be in that spot. Unless you move him, he's going to have to stay there. So Kingery is probably going to be at third, and you you have the young guy at third right now that you're waiting to bring up. So
it gets a little tricky.
Are you going to have Kingery moving around again as this utility player and have him in center field from time to time and all of that stuff?
Well, that's a tough one for Girardi.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
It is. Josh, what do you think? I mean, you have the utility of Kingery, but if you bring in Gregorius and you still have Segura, where are you putting Scott Kingery? Are you just simply putting him at third?
You can't put him at third. He just doesn't have the arm to play third.
I
can't do it. Yeah. So what do you do?
Put him in the outfield again?
Unfortunately, yeah, you probably are, because at the very least, even though we have the concerns about the arm, he can cover a lot of ground.
Yep.
That's all I got.
Yeah. All right. Let's go to our final call of the night. We go to Josh in Red Hill next on The Fanatic. What's up, Josh?
Hey, good evening, guys. Two of my favorite Sixer minds in radio history.
Oh, wow.
Thank you, man.
Appreciate that.
I call and love both of you for the knowledge that you give for the Sixers. And all sports, I'm not saying that. But Sixers,
thank you.
I listen for Sixers talk because I believe you two have your finger on the pulse. So, and real quick, sign a pitcher. That's what I'm saying. Don't even worry about it. Put Kingery in short side of pitcher. All right, that's what I'm going.
There you go.
Yeah, so let's not even worry about it. Short pitcher.
Keep it simple.
That's what we need. Better rotation. Listen, real quick, guys. I know I actually haven't listened to you guys much over the last couple of days. But I have two things going back in a little bit Sixer history. One, the Pacers assistant coach is just a child and a baby. And I think people abuse Embiid more than Embiid gets calls. So I think people think he's the best center in the league. And you can push them around and they won't make a call. Well, now they're starting to, so now everyone's starting to complain. And that's my first topic I want to hear about. You guys think about it. And the second one is, do you think him getting zero in Toronto is an embarrassment to him and his game? And I feel he's played better since.
I think it lit a fire. He admitted it. He realized that he hadn't been aggressive, said he wanted to be more aggressive. Wanted to do better with double teams, and that was also on the surrounding cast as well and the coaching staff to make that whole situation work better. So, it's not even close.
I mean, D, you would probably agree, and probably Devon, over the last five games since that game, I think the spacing on the floor has been
it's much better. Yeah.
I mean, considering everyone wants to say Brett Brown doesn't coach, well, maybe you're not getting Ben Simmons to shoot, but you're getting Ben Simmons to get out of the way and maybe create a little more space for Embiid. Mm-hmm. This guy was doubling most of the time. He was under the hoop.
That's the whole real estate thing.
And to your point about Dan Burke saying that he gets away with a lot of crap. Listen, a lot of star players get away with a lot of crap. Wait till you see this LeBron thing tonight with what he did in Utah with his travel. It's ridiculous.
And you should see what people used to say about Shaq.
Yes.
And some of it is just mere size.
I mean, what do you want him to do?
You're going to have to foul him if he's coming at you.
Yeah, and oftentimes we see him
get out of the way.
The elbow goes high a lot of times when your smaller player's on. It's just how it is with bigger players. Josh,
his elbows are at 6 feet five.
Exactly. Exactly. Josh, great stuff, man. Thank you so much for the kind words for both of us, man. Really appreciate it.
I appreciate it too.
A great night, man. And D, as always, this was a blast.
So much
Thank you.
Fun.
This is always fun. Look, it's 12 o'clock now.
Perfect.
It went by too quick. Thank you so much. As always.
I always enjoy spending some time with you.
And if we don't get together before our next broadcast, we are definitely the 27th.
Yes.
Our next Sixers.
My parents were at the Landmark last night because
they
went to the St. Joe game.
Ah, they got to stop by the broadcast.
I know,
when we do it. Yeah, got to come through. Got to come through the way.
I know you know my dad, but you got to see the other half.
Yeah, got to come through the way. Love it. Josh Rivick, love the work as always, man. Appreciate it. Thank you so much to everyone tonight calling in and tweeting at DNI listening, even if you couldn't reach out, phone or social media. We appreciate the listening. And of course, Clark, man, always thank you for still listening and all of the support throughout the years. I'll be back tomorrow.
Always love
no doubt, Don. I'll be back tomorrow after the Sixers Wizards doing the In the Post, and then back with Rob Motti on Friday at 7 o'clock. D, when you back in?
I'm back Saturday and Sunday. Okay. I'm the front end going into both those Sixers.
Okay, you got it. Well, have a great one, and I'll talk to you soon. Josh Rabick, thanks, man. I'll see you on Friday. Everybody else, have a great night. Talk to you tomorrow after the Sixers Wizards.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.